The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I don't know if it's just me, or if this will resonate with some or all of you, but somewhere along the line in my years of Soto Zen practice, I picked up the notion that there's something wrong with emotions, with having emotions. If emotions were arising, especially strong ones, it meant you weren't doing your meditation practice properly. Good meditation meant the cultivation of equanimity, and equanimity meant the absence of emotions. This is what I thought. I heard practitioners criticized for being on a roller coaster of emotions, very high highs and very low lows. Arhantship, enlightenment, realization of the truth, Buddhahood, it is taught, depend on ridding oneself of what are called the afflictive emotions or the defiling passions, lust or desire, anger and hatred, pride, jealousy, and confusion or delusion. Nirvana is the state where these emotions have stopped. Passion, it seemed to me, was almost a non-Buddhist word. Suffering's caused by attachment, and passion is the ultimate in attachment. So if I'm passionate about skiing, there's a problem. Here at Shasta Abbey, and within our order, I've heard it said of monks that they're caught in emotionalism. Emotionalism was clearly a pejorative, and the clear implication was that such monks were doing bad training. Now, mind you, this is being filtered through my own perceptions, so don't take me too literally here. And I hope that no one was saying this about me out of my earshot. Now, in his book, After the Ecstasy, the Laundry, Jack Kornfield writes, "How are we to understand emotional life after awakening has begun?" And I think that if we're training, we can say that awakening has begun. That's my aside. Jack writes, "Some traditions portray the awakened heart as totally unmovable. In the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha tells us, just as a solid rock remains unmoved by the wind, even so, neither sense impressions nor contacts of any kind, pleasant or unpleasant, desired or undesired, can cause the heart of one who has truly awakened to waver." That's the Anguttara Nikaya, and Jack continues, "I was taught this in many ways. Once as I was weeping in meditation, our visiting meditation master, Dipama Barua, said that such grieving was unnecessary for a yogi. Meditation teachers don't cry, she told me." And as an aside, I'll just mention that I had the good fortune of meeting Dipama. She was a teacher at one of my very first meditation retreats in Bodh Gaya. And she was a native of Calcutta who lost her husband and children and turned to meditation and became one of the great meditation masters of our time. She's now dead, but in the 80s, 90s, she was one of the great ones. Jack continues, "Yet my first meditation master, Ajahn Chah, had said exactly the opposite. Quote, tears are part of meditation. If you have not wept deeply, you have not begun to meditate. And my own master would add, if you haven't wept deeply publicly." Jack continues, "Different lineages regard the emotions in different ways. In some traditions, the unconscious patterns of greed, hatred, delusion, and fear are said to disappear completely. Others teach that they remain, but are transformed into experiences of wisdom and compassion. End quote. So, let's take a look at emotions. The primary emotions common to all human experience include anger and its variants, hatred, rage, irritability, vindictiveness, etc. Fear and its variants, like anxiety, worry, panic, and terror. Confusion, jealousy and envy, grief and its variants, sadness, despair, despondency, depression, etc. Happiness and its variants, amusement, gaiety, delight, wonder, playfulness, excitement, hope, etc. Contentment, joy and its variants, exhilaration, communion, bliss, splendor, etc. Related to emotions are feelings. In classical Buddhism, the word feeling has a technical meaning to mean the pleasure, pain, or neutral response we have to any sensation. Jack Kornfield, on the other hand, at some of his retreats, reads a list of 500 feelings to give you a sense of the perspective here, you know, the broad reach of our emotional life. These include affectionate, ambitious, ambivalent, amused, antagonistic, antsy, apathetic, appreciative, argumentative, blissful, brokenhearted, calm, cheerful, etc. I won't read you the rest. But the possibilities seem pretty endless, don't they? And then there are our moods. In the movie Steel Magnolias, when the good guy says to a chronically difficult, crabby neighbor, the good guy says, "You're crazy." And she replies, "I'm not crazy. I've just been in a bad mood for 40 years. And I love that. I think that's me. No. Anyway, there are, you know, moods have this sense of maybe lasting a long time. And there are good moods, bad moods, and moody moods, moody blues moods. Moods can last a long time. So we have emotions, feelings, and moods. And my intention here is not to distinguish one from another or to create a taxonomy of emotions. I just wanted to demonstrate what a huge part of our experience they are. And if we examine ourselves, we notice that some form of emotion is present. Can I say all the time? Maybe not all the time, but most of the time. And if we were to erase emotions and feelings and moods, we would be husks of our former selves. Noticing this, I began to wonder, is there really a problem here? And if so, what is it? Now, Ajahn Sumedho, in his book, Don't Take Your Life Personally, and I quote this often, says, "If it exists, it belongs." I love that sentence. He's pointing to the non-dual, inclusive character of Buddhism and to the possibility of letting go of our fierce attempts to fix our imperfect self and come rather to all acceptance, the great gateless gate. So emotions exist, therefore they must also belong. But what about all the work I put into fixing my emotions, getting rid of them or attempting to transform them from, say, grief into joy or anger into loving kindness? Is all of this misguided? What about all the harm afflictive emotions cause in the world? Shouldn't I be doing something about this? And is there another way to approach my or our emotional life? Something that begins with, if it exists, it belongs. Within the awareness of meditation practice, we can be simultaneously awed and dismayed at how often emotions are present and how powerful they can be. Interestingly, brain scientists have established that passion is inseparably linked to reason. Emotion's not just a perturbation of reason or the antithesis of reason, but a vital part of it. So we think that emotions, or I think anyway, that emotions cause us to make bad choices. But in fact, without emotions, we would make bad choices. We need emotions in order to make good choices. So in this, I find a hint that perhaps emotions aren't all bad. And then one day, as I was reflecting on grief, I had the insight that grief is a normal and natural human response to any loss, whether it's your favorite coffee mug or your spouse or a dear friend or a child, a parent, or just even a slight change in our surroundings or our circumstances. Up to that point, I had carried this belief that if I felt grief, it meant that I was attached. And if I was attached, I was suffering, and suffering's a no-no for a good Buddhist practitioner. And I wondered how I would ever get to the point that I could lose a loved one and not feel grief, or that a monk could disrobe and I would not feel grief. What now seems obvious to me clarified. Emotions are a normal and possibly, I would say probably, unavoidable part of human experience. And I wondered if it's possible even for the enlightened, even Buddhists, to feel emotions. So I got curious. If they're here, that they belong. If they're unavoidable, then is the attempt to get rid of them a good strategy? Do they serve some purpose? Are they trying to help? It's easy to think that if one is meditating properly, then the mind is going to become quiet and thoughts stop happening. But I think we all know that it's the brain's function to think, and when we sit in meditation, the thoughts don't stop, except in unusual circumstances or in death. And I wondered if the same could be true of emotions. Could it be that they don't stop? Just like the brain thinks, some part of us emotes, and it's not going to stop doing that. But then, so what are they here for? And what if I was willing to not turn away from them, but rather to just be with them? Even the painful ones, and explore them and learn from them. What if I was willing to listen? In attempting to listen, I discovered that emotions are trying to tell me something, and that they are actually wise and compassionate. They have a wise and compassionate side to them. And this discovery that there's wisdom in emotions was pivotal for me. Anger, for example, may be telling us that our boundaries are being violated, or that something unjust is happening, or that something harmful is happening. And this is information we need to get. It's giving us positive information that we can make good use to protect ourselves and to take care of others. Fear alerts us to danger and helps us to be vividly alert. Joy points us towards the truth that all is beautiful and connected, interconnected. If I begin with the premise that the emotions are wise and compassionate, that they are trying to help, then I'm able to approach them with love and acceptance and a willingness to see clearly. This enables a letting go of the instinct to reject them, fix them, repress, or suppress them. And emotions can indeed be afflictive. I think we all know this from our own experience. Even a little bit of desire can wreak havoc. Even if all I want is the big piece of cake that the monk in front of me took at the meal before I got to it, I can feel the tension in my body, the resentment at the person that arises. Small as it may be, a little thought which adds to and feeds the habit pattern of turning away from others. Does my greed mean that someone else in the world is starving? And anger. Anger feeds all the wars in the world. And it comes back to me expressing some small violence towards some person or thing. Fear can raise walls, preclude friendship. So what is good to do in the face of this reality? This word emotionalism that I used earlier, I think, provides a clue. Emotionalism is not just having emotions. It's being caught in emotions and indulging them. And caught and indulging are the operative words here. Emotions per se aren't the problem. Being caught in them is, and making something out of them is. And this is where our meditation practice becomes very helpful. When emotions arise during our formal meditation practice, the instruction is to simply see them clearly. See. That is, know them fully. Feel them in the body. Notice what thoughts arise on the wave of emotion that is passing through. Notice how we feed the thoughts. What stories do we tell ourselves? But to just notice, to see, and not to interfere, not to do anything about it, not to hold on or push away, not to get caught, not to be controlled by the emotion. Because when we're just looking, we're not controlled. It can arise and pass as it wishes. Then with that practice on the meditation cushion, when it comes to real life, we can create a nanosecond of space which allows us to respond to the situation that's creating the emotion with wisdom and compassion. Wisdom and compassion, the twin pillars of Mahayana Buddhism, rather than inflicting harm. I think it's interesting to try in meditation to just feel what the emotion feels like without giving it a name. Or if you have to name it, think of it as energy, but don't call it anger, and see what it's like. What is the emotion then? So the first tool, if you will, for responding to the arising of emotion is awareness. If we're not paying attention, we won't notice that the emotion is there. And the more closely we pay attention, the closer we come to the first arising of the emotion. And the sooner we catch an emotion at the first hint of it, rather than when it's gotten big and ugly, we can respond more effectively. So if we notice the first arising of the crabby mind, it might enable us to not lash out viciously at someone we feel is treating us inappropriately. Noticing how badly afflictive emotions in particular make us feel can enable us to put them down or drop them like something hot or grotesque or disgusting that we're holding. If we're not aware, we won't see them clearly. Secondly, don't believe your emotions. You know the bumper sticker, don't believe everything you think? Well, I'm thinking of a second bumper sticker, don't believe everything you emote or feel. Several years ago, I was having several times a day this horrific emotion would arise of terrible panic, terror. I had to get away from where I was. It was awful. And there was a kind of aversion to absolutely everything. And I had to get out of it. I had to do something very quickly. This was happening to me several times a day. And it was during the time that we were having some rather painful difficulties here when our abbot was disrobing and leaving monastic life in the monastery. And I thought, oh, I must be in a very dangerous place. Maybe I have to get out of here. And it took me 2 years to notice that every time this emotion arose, it was followed by a hot flash. And that the emotion, the emotion was based on a chemical, you know, a hormonal imbalance in my body. So what if I had believed the emotion, and what if I had acted on the emotion? I hate to think of what the results could have been. I'm really glad I'm here today. Third, watch out for denial. Something I've noticed about myself is that if I'm angry or jealous or stingy, well, I don't want to be angry or jealous or stingy, so I pretend it's not there and I'm not like that. So then I don't notice that I'm feeling the emotion, and then I do something stupid as a result. You know, a good Buddhist isn't stingy, so I just don't see that I'm being stingy. So not to pretend that we're not feeling what we actually are feeling. Fourth, don't indulge the storyline. Don't feed the thoughts attached to the emotion. And I think we all know this one. We can get into the reason why we're justified in feeling the way that we feel, and really get a head of steam up, you know, something really going under that greed. So whether it's anger or joy, don't feed the emotion. Whether it's despair or euphoria, don't feed it. It's not that you don't feed the bad ones, but you do feed the good ones because you want to keep them. So don't encourage it. Just let it be as it is, whatever the emotion is. And then, fifth, let go, let go, let go. Attachment even to joy is still suffering. Sixth, pause before speaking or acting. Create that nanosecond of space that allows wise action to arise. And then seventh, respond. Act for the good. Cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. Eighth, know that you're responsible for anything you do, as Reverend Master Mahon said in a recent Dharma talk. You are responsible, I am responsible for anything we do, no matter how powerful the emotion. In this country, we exonerate criminals for crimes of passion. Karma never lets us off the hook. We are responsible. And ninth, constantly refer to the precepts. Use them as your guide. Notice when the arising of an emotion causes us to break a precept, and notice or learn or teach ourselves how to make a different choice. You know, when you make a mistake, you can actually learn from it and make a different choice the next time. In speaking generally, emotions go astray when there's attachment to self. All our training is geared towards the relinquishment of self-cherishing. That's what it's all about. With such relinquishment, suffering is extinguished. The teachings on emptiness of self are crucial here, because if we don't understand emptiness of self, we have no reason to let go of it. And this is the recognition that there is no fixed separate self to save and protect that can be harmed, and the recognition that all things are connected to all things. That we save what we think of as self by saving all beings, including ourselves, and by taking care with all that is equally, self and other alike. In the end, self is empty, and the emotions are empty too. The emotions are empty too. Now, in some Buddhist writings, there's a threefold schema for a Buddhist practice. Three steps, if you will: renunciation, transformation, and already enlightenment. And to me, this schema suggests a helpful and skillful way to train with emotions and their afflictive capacity. The first approach to practice, as I said, is renunciation. And we can think of this as restraint. When an afflictive emotion arises, we restrain it. We restrain afflictive emotions before they arise. This is the effort to not do things which are harmful or to allow the arising of emotions that will lead to harm. Okay, so there's preventing the arising, but once arisen, there's restraining it. At the same time, we can equally think of renunciation as letting go. It's the same thing as restraint, or it comes to the same end. The second approach to practice is transformation. This is the work of transforming afflictive emotions into useful ones. In our tradition, we often speak of the transformation of compassion, of greed, hatred, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom. I myself have done a lot of work transforming anger into loving kindness. So whenever a negative thought, an angry thought arises, I replace it with a thought of loving kindness, first for myself and then for someone else, or whoever's involved in the situation. May I be well and happy. May I be free from suffering. May I be at peace. May they be well and happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be at peace. If I'm angry, I'm hurting, so it doesn't hurt to have a little compassion turned towards myself. And if I turn that same loving kindness towards another person, it changes how I feel about them immediately. They may never know anything about it, but at least I've shifted something in myself. So after some years of practicing this, I notice that anger arises a little less, and I appreciate the people around me a little more. Now, the third approach is what I've called already enlightenment, or self-liberated. This is the teaching that we're already enlightened, that things as they are not a problem. You may remember Jack Kornfield said, some traditions teach that the emotions are gotten rid of completely. That's restraint. Other traditions teach that they're transformed. That's what we just talked about. And then there's self-liberated. Third approach to the emotions in Buddhist teachings. There is just this. It's not a problem. This is, in a sense, where we arrive when all acceptance is fully functioning. Jealousy, panic, they're here. I'm willing to be present with what is. What do they have to teach me? What is their wisdom? In this place, there's no fixing, nothing to do, just being with. And I would be interested in our investigation of what happens then. I'll leave that as an open question. So sometimes these three approaches are conveyed as steps, and that one is more advanced than the other. But I don't think that's the way it is. My own experience is that there are actually three aspects of one whole. And any one of them taken by themselves is actually dangerous. And they need each other to support each other. So in dealing with our emotions, it's critical that we engage all three to train the emotions and really to train with anything fully and completely. So they complement each other, and they're interwoven. We accomplish all three at once, not one at a time. So that's renunciation, transformation, already enlightenment. So I'll end by saying that I don't think it's helpful to think that the result of our training, our movement towards enlightenment, means that the emotions go away. Or at least that hasn't been helpful to me. I don't think it's helpful to think that we are bad if emotions arise. Emotions will arise. The real question is, what do we do then? What we do is no different from what we do with any other phenomenon or person, thing, or situation. We don't hold on and we don't push away. We let go of everything. Letting go of everything over and over again from one moment to the next until the moments are woven together in a seamless fabric of equanimity and all acceptance. These precious emotions are not separate from that. Thank you.